This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run. It's 8:37 right now. I'm Melissa Idris with Joyce Goh and Brian Fernandez this morning as we take a look at the biggest news of the day. Now, the Communications and Multimedia Ministry has identified possible suspects behind the theft and attempted sale of information belonging to tens of millions of Malaysians. Now, I mean, this is a follow-on, the latest development in the data breach story. I think it broke a couple of weeks ago on Lawyat. There was a report on lawyat.net mid-October. And it claimed the personal data of 46.2 million Malaysians had been breached.
Yeah, so basically, according to the Communications and Multimedia Minister, he said that information gleaned following meetings with telecommunications operators revealed that they've narrowed now the source of the data leak and the police are involved in it. They do not rule out that, in fact, the source was actually the local telco.
Right, so there's a couple of elements here. Finding out the source of the data leak and finding out the possible suspects behind the theft of this much data.
Yeah, so the backstory is that news about the alleged leak, as Melissa mentioned, it came out on lawyat.net on October 19th, right? Mm-hmm. And the report claimed that personal data of 46.2 million Malaysians from the databases of an online recruitment portal and medical associations, as well as over 50 million records of customer data from various telcos were up for sale online.
Yeah. So when we saw that, the first question that comes to mind is which companies, right?
Yes.
So according to BBC, they've named the companies Maxis, Digi, Celcom, U-Mobile, the Malaysian Medical Association and the Malaysian Housing Loans Applications, also the National Specialist Registrar of Malaysia, and there's so many more, I'm sure, which have not yet been uncovered. But these leaks didn't happen recently. They happened a while back, right? 2014, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, and the stolen data included like customer names, billing addresses, mobile phone numbers, SIM card numbers, handset models, and to me, this one, the My Card numbers, that's quite scary,
yeah,
right? Yeah, information.
Sure.
And
So there's going to be a huge implication for this because, well, obviously the numbers look huge and people will be wondering, why is it 46 million? Because it also includes, of course, there will be double entries because it's certain different data sets. Because we've, after all, only got 30 million Malaysians here.
No, but maybe foreigners?
Foreigners as well, yes, of course.
Yeah, anyone buying, you know, a SIM card.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, look, this is an ongoing story. And I think a lot, I don't know about you, but I'm sure many Malaysians, like myself included, we're worried, right? What's happening to our data? Am I part of this 46 million? And I have to say that there's a serious concern that I could be part of that. I got an email from one of these companies to say that, you know, to identify that there's been a data breach in the company and to ask me to change my login and password.
Oh. For me, it's my data that's involved, but also what are you going to do with the data?
Exactly. Well, a couple of weeks ago, we spoke to Culture Pop's Matt Armitage to find out more about the potential implications of this breach.
Oh, gosh. I mean, where do you start with implications? If it's true, then, I mean, to be honest, I think we've got to the point now where everyone in the world should just assume that their data has been stolen. We hear about these kind of massive data breaches in pretty much every country around the world. I think we should just assume that if our information is being stored on a database somewhere, it isn't safe. And you should assume that somebody else has at some point managed to gain some of your details, whether that's addresses or phone numbers or social security numbers or passport numbers, identity card numbers. There really isn't any way to keep your data safe in the kind of environment, the online environment we have today.
That was Matt Armitage from Culture Pop. Now, that's quite disconcerting to hear, to have him say that you should just assume your data has been stolen. At this point in time, everyone should just assume their data has been stolen. And it's not just in Malaysia. There are examples of other countries as well suffering from these kind of data breaches.
Yeah, so earlier this year, we had the Equifax scandal.
It was massive, yeah.
Which is 145 million consumer records were stolen by hackers. And that's a consumer credit reporting agency in the US. And that happened in July, but interestingly enough, even in an advanced economy like that, it was only reported in September.
Yeah, remember last year Yahoo reported in September, also last year, that up to 500 million accounts in 2014 had been breached in an apparent state-sponsored data breach. And it was later reported in October 2017 that 3 billion accounts had been breached, accounting for every Yahoo account at that time. Yeah. That's huge.
That means that everyone who ever had a Yahoo account in 2014 had their personal information breached. Mm. So yeah, that's, I think, information that came out not too long ago. But the Malaysian Dental Association has also admitted that it was alerted to a security breach on its online system in February. But again, it didn't make it public. So they were told of the security breach when they had hired, I think, cybersecurity experts to take a look at their system. They found, oh, their system has been breached. Additionally, JobStreet was also one of the first companies to reach out to the customers, saying that it had been affected by this huge data breach. And I really want to know, I mean, how are the other companies going to deal with this issue, right? So I can imagine what they're going to be doing to mitigate the breach of personal information.
And whether this breach is coming from hackers, is it outside or is it like maybe staff or staff selling the online data? You know,
as
like
third party.
Yeah,
third
like
party.
Selling yeah. to third party.
Well, you
people.
Know, you could also use these kind of stolen data not just to impersonate the victims, you know, create new credit card accounts or sign up for all sorts of things. But imagine if, you know, they use your information for illegal activities in the dark web. Mm. You could be sitting pretty not knowing that your identity is being used for illicit, you know, activities. God knows what on the dark
web. Yeah, the biggest concern for me personally is that's one issue, but also the fact that financially, for example, if they've got all your MyCard identity details and so forth, the ability to then borrow money or credit
sign up
cards
for a credit
and stuff,
card. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Who
so
knows?
That's the worrying part.
Well, we also went back to Matt Armitage from Culture Pop to ask him, what can we do as individuals to secure our own data?
Well, there really aren't any steps that we can start taking because it's not being stolen from us. So when you go to a bank, you know, when you go to any organization and you give them personal information about you, you can't assume that they're going to be able to keep that information safe because there is no way to keep that information safe. So the only way to change this is to fundamentally change the details, for example, that a company needs from you to process a loan or the information that they keep on record about you. It could even be a case of, you know, your company keeps a lot of your details on file because they're making tax payments on your behalf. You know, they're paying your SOXO contributions or whatever. All of these things are databases. They all have your personal details in them and none of them are secure. We have to give these companies information and they do their best for the most part to keep your information safe. Sometimes we find out the companies don't have very strong data protection, but at the same time, we know that hackers can get into even the most secure databases. So as I said at the beginning, I think the safest assumption you can make is that people already have your information.
That was Matt Armitage from Culture Pop. You can catch him with Jeff Sandu on Tech Talk every Friday at 10 a.m. Now, just to come back on that, you know, that point that Matt made about the information's been stolen from companies that have harvested our data. We have the Malaysian Personal Data Protection Act that does impose a duty on data users to put adequate security and indemnity measures to prevent theft, misuse or unauthorized access. But whether or not these measures are enough, I think the government will be looking at chairing a cabinet committee on cybercrime because this is, in fact, the new normal. 8:46 right now after this news that Malaysia has slipped in the World Bank's business ranking. Right here on The Morning Run, BFM 89.9. 8:49 right now. You're listening to The Morning Run with Brian Fernandez, Joyce Goh and me, Melissa Idris. Now, some breaking news for you. According to two White House officials, Jerome Powell is expected to be the U.S. president's nominee to serve as the next chair for the Federal Reserve. Now, this, I think, just maybe cementing a bit of the market speculation that Jerome Powell was going to be Trump's nominee. This ahead of the official announcement. So the White House is going to make an official announcement later today. So Thursday in the U.S., that should be sometime tonight for us. And that could end months of speculation ahead of Janet Yellen's term ending in January. No, that's February.
February.
Yeah, so overall, I think some of the sentiments, some of the comments that have come up is the fact that, and we've spoken to some of our Market Watch analysts previously, and really, he's a safe pair of hands. So I'll quote an analyst from Jefferies, and he said that he's boring, but he's to the point. You don't listen to him and scratch your head and wonder what he's just said.
Okay, so described as boring, but seen as a solid choice, shall we say.
Well, Powell's popular within the Fed Reserve System because he's been governor since 2012, right? And he's an old-school Republican who served in the Treasury Department under President George Bush and was appointed by Obama. He was an attorney before. And his net worth, which is said to be as reported to be as high as $75 billion.
Ooh. Yeah, because he worked in private equity before, Joyce.
I see. When he was nominated for a full term in 2014, that makes him the richest Fed governor, apparently.
The richest Fed governor? Okay.
$75 million?
All wow. Right, yeah, not too bad. I mean, kind of in line with Trump's, Trump likes that kind of really rich white man. So I guess that's in line. Uh-huh. However, again, it's really the best nominee for the job. Powell is expected to be more in favor of financial deregulation than Yellen. So we'll have to see whether or not that there's going to be any changes in terms of the Federal Reserve stance on that. However, The main thing that markets will be looking out for is whether he will likely stick close to Yellen's style when it comes to monetary policy as well as interest rates.
Yeah, so he looks like he's going to be a super dove. Well, more likely to follow Yellen in that way than hawkish like Ben Bernanke. But he's proven himself, interestingly enough, to be a little bit more hawkish than some of the other nominees so far.
And all this, of course, on the back of news that last night the Federal Reserve held off from raising interest rates. We'll likely see something perhaps before the end of the year. But coming back home, this year's Doing Business report by the World Bank, Malaysia fell in the global rankings. So it was 190 economies that were looked at, and we fell to the 24th spot from 23rd last year.
Yeah, so we declined in some small areas. For example, in getting electricity, we are ranked number 8. Registering property, we're 42. But we did see an overall improvement in distance to frontier score this year, going up one point.
What is the distance to frontier?
Well, basically, it measures the distance of each country to the frontier economy, which is essentially the best performing country in each of its indicators measured. So essentially, what the World Bank country manager in Malaysia, Faris Hadid Zervos, said, that the drop in the ranking was not really due to Malaysia not performing well, but really because of the depth, breadth and pace of reform among other countries that have joined the phone. So essentially what he's saying is other people have done well, better than us. We've done well, but other people have done better.
Well, Malaysia has performed better in some areas. It ranked 4th in protecting minority shareholders with a DTF of 80 from last year. Well, that's a big jump. And this is because of amendments in the Companies Act has strengthened protections for minority shareholders by requiring greater corporate transparency, right? And we also, in terms of getting credit, we're ranked 20th. Previously, we were ranked 75. And trading across borders, we're ranked 61. From 82 last year.
So all these metrics, the World Bank looked at them and just to see how easy it is to start a business or to do business in Malaysia. I think one of the countries that became a bit of the scapegoat for Malaysia's fall in the rankings has got to be the UAE, because the UAE jumped from 26th place last year to 21st place. So they kind of leapfrogged us a little bit, and we also fell down the rankings. So perhaps the performance of the UAE clearly has good for them. They've really been implementing reforms in the business community.
So absolutely, I think one of the key things is because the competitive landscape now is just getting harder and harder. We really need to look at some of the macro reforms as well as micro reforms in terms of our competitiveness. And I think automotive industry is one of those areas that perhaps we should be looking at.
Well, definitely, because according to MITI, the International Trade and Industry Ministry, they say that incentives for local vendors under the National Automotive Policy is going to stay?
Yeah, so this is has arisen because of concerns brought up by the Proton Vendors Association recently in their meeting with the new Proton CEO, that they were concerned that the Geely, now being the managing, the controlling partner at Proton, would bring in Chinese parts and basically integrate their own supply chain into the Proton supply chain, leaving the Malaysian vendors in a lurch. So essentially then, the minister has come out and say that basically all the incentives will continue to be in place.
Well, an industry source told the Malaysian Reserve that the assurance was given during a meeting between Proton vendors and industry players, and the source added that current protection mechanisms will remain, so such like industrial linkage program that provides incentives and duty exemption to original equipment manufacturers that use local components. So in quotes, if Proton wants to bring in parts from abroad like China, they will not be entitled for ILP incentives, ILP meaning industrial linkage program incentives, excise duty and tax exemptions that will increase the cost of the car.
Yeah, so, okay, all these things, part of the kind of industry protectionism, right? So, and we're just talking about competitiveness not too long ago. We want to go up in the ease of doing business rankings, and yet we still have these kind of protective or protectionism measures within industries in Malaysia. So it's really quite, one step forward, two steps back here. But let's move on to other corporate news. Berjaya Corp has announced the return of Tan Sri Vincent Tan as the executive chairman. So Vincent Tan is back.
Yeah, so he was currently the advisor to the group. Remember, he announced his retirement from active corporate role in the company on February 22nd, 2012. That was when he turned 60, citing that he would like to focus on his philanthropic work.
Yeah. And so currently he's advisor to the group, yes, right, after yes. he announced that retirement. Yes. Now yes. that he's back as chairman, that means he would take over from his son, Dato Sri Robin Tan, who's acting chairman and CEO.
Yes, remember the group announced then in 2012 that Dato Sri Robin would hold the position of chairman and CEO until a suitable candidate has been identified. So I don't know, maybe until now they haven't found anyone. I'm not sure, I'm just speculating.
Maybe he was bored.
Maybe Dato Sri just missed his working.
And he's also very young after all.
Yeah. 60 is quite young.
So perhaps he tried retirement and it just wasn't for him. I don't know. But,
so back to
but
work.
Yeah, so Dato Sri Robin is still CEO. Yeah, and he was CEO then when Tan Sri Vincent Tan retired, and he just took on the chairmanship role. So dual role at that time, and then the group said that they will look for someone for the chairmanship role, remember? And that was in 2012. So yeah, so now it looks like Tan Sri Vincent Tan is coming back to work.
So could they not find someone else to
I'm
fill
not
that
sure.
role?
But and maybe Tan Sri just misses working.
Maybe he does, but it's better, I think, to separate the role of chairman and CEO, right? Better corporate governance to have those two roles filled by separate people.
Yeah, absolutely. But also this brings an interesting focus on how successful family businesses perform relative to broader equity markets. So just a couple of days ago, the Credit Suisse Research Institute released its third edition of the Credit Suisse Family 1000 report on family-owned businesses globally. And it basically looks at family businesses and reveals how that they outperformed broader equity markets in every region and sector by an average of 3.9% per year, going back to 2006.
Wow.
So very interesting. It's not what you think. You think that professional managers may run businesses very well, but yet the empirical evidence is showing that, in fact, family businesses
do well. So this is family-owned companies globally. Where does Malaysia stand in this ranking?
Malaysia ranks 7th globally. I guess that's quite high, right?
That's
in terms of
bad.
Number of family-owned businesses within Credit Suisse Research Report, right? So, yeah, and the financial performance of family-owned companies is also superior to non-family-owned peers. This is from Malaysia, the Credit Suisse Report said.
All right, we've got the 9 o'clock news bulletin coming up in just a couple of minutes, and we'll give you the opening numbers from Bursa Malaysia then. So stay tuned to BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.